Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Hey, welcome, welcome, everybody. You're listening to Energy Matters, and I am Caroline Rutterman. And today we have a very special guest, as well as a friend of mine, Sivia Gopher. And welcome, Sivia.
Well, I am happy to be here.
And I'm happy that you're here, too. So, Sivia, if anyone out there in Radioland driving around knows her, maybe. Sivia is a certified dream therapist. She's an author. She's an educator, a poet. And she's doing some really cool stuff around this area. So, Sivia, I'm going to let you introduce yourself a little bit. So tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, a lot of what I do is try to help people fall back in love with sleep and dreams. And I do that in a variety of ways. I work with people one-on-one and in groups on their dreams. I teach people to work with dreams professionally. And I also do a lot of work with everyday mindfulness, and that segues into the dreams and sleep because I preach taking a mindful approach to bedtime.
So what is a mindful approach to bedtime? What does that look like? What does that even mean?
Yeah, exactly. So let's unpack it a little bit, because first of all, there's mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people practice mindfulness in one way or another, especially around here. Some people meditate. Some people just try to cultivate their present moment awareness. But one thing I noticed that even people who are big into meditation and yoga and all of those practices that cultivate present moment awareness, it all falls asleep at bedtime, right? We fall into bed when we're exhausted. We've stayed up too late. And there is no time to pay attention to what exactly we're doing and how we're doing it. Mm. But sleep and dreams are part of the same cycle of consciousness that we're trying to tune into with our awareness during the day. So I try to help people take little baby steps to start to be conscious about what they do at bedtime and how they do it.
That's really interesting. That reminds me a little bit about how the Tibetans approach dreams as well, and their kind of mindfulness approaches to dreaming and bringing their conscious attention all the way through sleep, which I think is a very, very advanced technique for even the most mindful daytime practitioner.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's where we're heading. So I start people off with very practical things they can do. I've studied Tibetan dream yoga, and I'm all about that.
It's very cool.
It's amazing. But actually practicing it for us mere mortals who have jobs and families and responsibilities during the day is hard because it requires esoteric practices and meditations that you need to wake yourself up for many times a night.
Wow.
So I draw from Tibetan dream yoga. And I offer some sort of simple versions of some of those techniques and incorporate some of the basic philosophies and principles into what I teach that are much more practical for people who are incorporating awareness of sleep and dreams into a busy full life.
So there's definitely a lot, even just in that little talk right there, that I want to dig into. But let's reel it back just a tiny little bit, thinking about why do we care about dreaming? Like, I love dreams. I value my dreams, partly from our getting to know you and really emphasizing how important and how much you value them. I think back to my own dreams and some of our conversations, and, you know, it's created a richer life having, you know, developed a friendship. However, it is... not everybody values their dreams, and that blows my mind. So tell us from your perspective what dreams mean to you.
Yeah, so excellent question, because when I go around and talk to people about dreams, which I do professionally, so I do it a lot.
Yeah.
I get met with so many mixed reactions. And a lot of people are basically, if I were to sum it up, they're scared of their dreams.
What?
Yeah, I kind of get it.
Scared of nightmares?
They're scared that they might have nightmares. Maybe they've had nightmares and, you know, they don't want to have that experience again. A nightmare can really feel real. Wake up shaken. You see things you might not want to see, you know, gory, scary things. But then there's, I think, even more common, the general discomfort with the unknown and the mysterious. So, you close your eyes at night. You don't know what you're going to get. It could be fun and it could be scary. And it could just be mystifying, like, huh, why did I dream, you know, that crazy thing last night? And we don't really like the unknown. When it comes down to it, it makes us a little squirmy.
Yeah, a little uncomfortable. It's not always the place that we put ourselves in deliberately.
Exactly. And the beautiful part is I just love what I do. Because one of the things I get to do is talk to people from all different cultures and backgrounds about their dreams. And I find that when I just open up the conversation a little bit, I can often put their mind to rest about nightmares and help them see that even the scariest dream has healing potential in it. And that sometimes people have had dreams that scare them because they think, how could I have dreamed something so terrible? There must be something wrong with me.
Right.
So I get the opportunity to assure people that dreams are a natural, healthy byproduct of sleep. And the dream imagery they're seeing is not in any way pathological.
Right.
And that helps. And just that little bit of information sends people on their way feeling more curious about their dreams. And then we can get into how dreams can really help you day to day.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, let's talk about how dreams can help us day to day.
Yeah. So for me, it's, you know, I started noticing the benefits of dreams from a pretty early age. I think the most profound realization I had was when I was about high school and college age, and I started to see how dreams were putting pictures, so to speak, on some of my emotional pain.
Mm.
You know, and what young adult doesn't have some emotional pain they need to process?
Most of them.
Exactly. So once I realized that for myself, I started to want to learn more and help other people with it. So what I have found is that dreams, on the most maybe, I want to say day-to-day, but night-to-night level, bring up to the surface things in us that are unresolved and give us new ways of seeing vexing problems. So right there, the dream's a great tool. So they can spark creative ways of seeing something or just plain creativity, right? You can get a story or a poem or a painting out of a dream. And then when you go farther with them and you really learn to work with them, they can help you see how you're thinking, what the quality of your thought is like. Is your mind busy or relaxed? Are you skewing towards anxiety or are you finding your way towards more clarity and joy? So they give you almost like a nightly EKG or some kind of readout of what's going on inside you.
Oh, that's interesting. And I think that, you know, for people who tend to dismiss dreams, or maybe not dismiss, maybe that's a strong word, but maybe they don't place a lot of value on them for any reason. I think there's this sort of preconception that, oh, it's just a processing of your day. It's a jumble. It doesn't mean anything. And there's kind of this, yeah, I guess it is a little bit of a dismissal.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think of it as a way of expressing our creativity through that space. And I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And that dismissal of dreams, it's a culture-wide thing. And it's a lot of it is because of when scientists first started to learn about how the brain works. So this is like a lot of dreams, bad publicity came in maybe the 70s.
Uh-oh.
So there was a sort of resurgence with Freud and Jung, and more people started to look at their dreams in Western culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly thereafter, science started to be able to show us some of the random neuronal firings that help create the dreams.
Cool.
And that's when we started to get the kinds of thinking that you just voiced, you know, oh, dreams, it's just, you know, I ate some bad pizza,
right,
or too much pizza before bed, or, you know, they're just random sparks from my brainstem, and why should I pay attention?
Mm.
But once we put together the lessons that science has given us, with the ancient wisdom about dreams, you mentioned Tibetan dream yoga, almost every culture has looked at dreams as a message from the divine.
Oh.
So we start putting this together, we get sort of the best of psychology, science, mysticism, and then we're, you know, we're cooking with gas. We can really...
Yeah. And mindfulness.
Exactly. That's part of the ancient tradition.
Very cool.
Sort of a modern spin on the ancient tradition. So
that's really, really neat.
Yeah.
So... Knowing the work that you do, you're very different than a lot of the. It's not just a dream dictionary. You don't go to Barnes and Noble and flip open tea to teeth, and it's like, oh, my dream. I had a dream that my teeth were falling out. It's like none of that. It's not a standardized dictionary of dream symbolism. Can you talk a little bit about your approach and how? I know you have a lot of different types of approaches, but maybe talk a little bit about how you approach dreams.
Sure.
Or interpreting dreams, I should say.
Yeah. So the word interpreting sometimes can be a little misleading because it brings up this image that there's, you know, you can interpret, just as you mentioned, a great symbol, teeth falling out, because that's one of the universal dream themes that people have been having across time and culture. But you can't just take a dream and parse it like that. Everybody brings their own personal dictionary, so to speak, of association.
Mm.
So if you dream about a dog and you love dogs and you're comfortable with dogs, that dog might represent to you friendship, companionship, play.
Loyalty.
Loyalty. Beautiful. See, that's in your lexicon. For myself, I'm scared of dogs.
Mm.
So when I dream about a dog, it represents my fears most of the time.
Interesting.
So how do we figure it out? We figure it out by me as the dream therapist asking you, in this case as the dreamer, a lot of questions and really listening. And I talked about the mystery of the dream. I focus more on unpacking the dream, you know, spending some slow time talking about each image and each scenario in the dream, seeing as we go along if there might be some bridges to waking life, but not prodding for an answer. I find the quote-unquote interpretation emerges as we go. And so often, you know, somebody will tell me a dream and I can't help myself. Something in me will say, oh, I know what that's about.
Right.
And then once I start to draw out from the dreamer what are their associations with these symbols and people in the dream, it goes in a whole different direction.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So the bottom line is the dream belongs to the dreamer.
Mm.
And only the quote-unquote interpretation or the message that gives them the feeling of, aha, you know, that's it, or they feel a little charge of excitement, that's the only one that matters, not what I think.
Right. And having attended some of your dream groups in the past, you know, allowing a space for people to explore what these messages are, what their personal relationship with some of these dream symbols, you always set up a set of rules, ground rules for the dream group. And I remember some of them. Well, tell us some of the rules, because I really liked your rules about not putting your associations on other dreamers.
Yeah, I'll often say that you can't hijack someone else's dream. You know, don't hijack someone else's dream. And we use this expression that comes from Jeremy Taylor, a great dream worker who just passed away this past year, tragically. We use this expression that he started called, if it were my dream. Mm. So we never say, oh, Caroline, you dreamed about X, Y, and Z. That must mean you have problems with this or you ought to. Instead, it's if it were my dream. If it were my dream and I dreamed about a pumpkin turning into a basketball, it might mean, you know. So we keep it with ourselves. And, of course, we have rules about confidentiality. You know, I call it the Vegas rule. You know, what goes on here stays here. What's said in our group stays in our group. So those are some of the basic guidelines. And mostly I encourage group members to really listen and listen to the dream as if it's their dream.
Mm, I like that. And, you know, having those rules felt like it created a safe space. And it really makes a huge difference when you're kind of delving into your subconscious or your imagination or whatever is going on for you during the day. Or, you know, it really allows you just the container to explore those kind of murkier areas or those scary areas for different people if they do feel scared of those uncomfortable dreams.
Yeah, I agree. It's so important. And I think in the one-on-one work and in the group work, that's what I try to be conscious of, just creating a quote-unquote safe or creating the conditions for safety, creating that space so people can let the dream open up for them. And it's a beautiful process when people start to see that, you know, yeah, a little guidance helps and hearing other people's perspective helps, but they really have it inside of themselves. I think that's what I love the most. It's very empowering.
Yeah.
You know, the answers are in them and from them. It's their dream.
It's your dream.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of coming back to it and thinking about, I remember I had shared a dream with you. It was a recurring nightmare that I had when I was a child. And, you know, my life is an open book. I'm very comfortable sharing, you know, intimate details about myself. But I remember having this dream as a kid, and there was a volcano, and I was at my grandparents' place, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I just remember kind of having, it was a terrifying dream, and I had it many times when I was a kid. And I just remember having this real aha moment that that volcano really represented anger and that eruption of anger for me, and that I was running from it. And it was such a, having that realization about that dream that plagued me when I was a kid felt really healing. And it just, when I kind of understood it and when we like fleshed it out together, I got it. So many things from that time of my life just made sense in how I was interpreting it. And it's a really beautiful process when you get to all of a sudden something, you have that eureka moment and it's aha. And it's very empowering.
It is, isn't it? It's really empowering. And the healing really sticks, I find. You know, studies have shown, and I've observed, that dream work is a very effective form of short-term therapy.
Mm.
Because we're sort of short-circuiting, especially those of us who are very verbal and we're good at talking around or even about our problems or issues. And the dreams with those vivid images, like that volcano erupting that you described, they cut right through.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it wasn't exploding with lava or ash. It was exploding with blubber.
I love it.
You know, it's like a little kid who's obsessed with whales. I don't know.
I love it.
But yeah, it's definitely very vivid. So let's, we're going to take a short break. And Sivia is also an author. She has got a few great books. I have two of her books, and I know you've written quite a few books over the years.
Four or five. Yeah.
So, and she's a poet and very, very thoughtful person in general. So we're going to, after we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of her writing, as well as her Facebook group, her 350 Dreamers Facebook group, which is a really fun way that people can dream for world peace. So, welcome back. You are listening to Energy Matters, and I am Caroline Rutterman. And today, we are interviewing Sivia Gover. And welcome back, Sivia.
I'm glad to be here still, even after the first segment.
Awesome. So we are going to talk a little bit about, and so Sivia is a certified dream therapist, if anyone is just tuning in as they're driving home from work, and an author, educator, poet. And so let's talk a little bit about your books. So you have a new-ish book. It's been out for about a year.
A little less, yeah.
A little less than a year. It's called The Mindful Way to a Good Night's Sleep. Discover how to use dream work, meditation, and journaling to sleep deeply and wake up well. And I was at, when this book first came out, you were doing a lot of promotion, and you had a talk at Forbes Library in the the Coolidge Museum Collection Library, which is always closed, and it's a very regal room, and it really set the tone that evening. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about a good night's sleep in your book, and I have never seen a Forbes Library event so packed. Mm. People don't sleep well. People are really, really craving a good night's sleep. And first of all, you have a very steady following and your messages are always really powerful and clear. And I think people are very drawn to your work. So that I just saying that, and you're a very fun speaker to listen to, but people also really sleep is a huge, huge challenge. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about why you kind of chose to have this be your focus rather than, because it's like, oh, right, you dream while you sleep. And sometimes you forget that a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of curious as to why you chose to focus on a good night's sleep and mindfulness.
Yeah. So that's a great question. I've been into dreams for years and years, and for some reason, it took me a long time to get to what you're saying, too, the way sleep and dreams are fully integrated. So all day long, we're moving through these cycles of consciousness, wake, daydreaming, mind wandering, sleep. And then in sleep, there are all these different stages, too. So they go together, although we forget that. So when you walk into a bookstore, I noticed, you go, and on one shelf, there are the sleep books. And in a whole nother section, along with sort of all the woo-woo stuff,
right,
are the dream books.
What's
and that
up with
makes
that?
No sense.
What's up
right?
with that?
Dreaming's a natural, healthy part of sleep, but we treat it like it's some strange, weird interest for just a very specialized group. Everybody dreams, every single person, from babies in utero to old people, and of course our dogs and cats are dreaming. So I really felt like it's important to bring them together. And the more I've worked with sleep and dreams, the more I've realized that that it is the place, as we started out talking about, it's the place in our lives where we're the very least mindful. We literally let our heads hit the pillow, close our eyes, and we think that we just shut off. And so much is going on. I also find that the more you understand about sleep, you can understand more about your dreams as well, and you get a little more information about them.
Mm.
Because your body and your mind, your emotions, all aspects of being are working together in the night. So there's not a real clear separation. We're taught that dreams come only during REM cycles, the rapid eye movement cycles, but that's not even true.
Really?
Dreams can happen in any stage of sleep. So I just feel like they need to be integrated, and the more they're integrated, the better. Our attitudes about dreams affect the quality of our sleep.
Mm.
Again, we touched on it earlier. If you're afraid of, or just dismissive of, or weary about your dreams, you're going to subconsciously be avoiding sleep and be uncomfortable with it.
That's interesting.
So they affect each other a lot. And obviously the quality of sleep affects the quality of your dreams.
Of course. Of course. So talk to us a little bit about, and if you're just tuning in, we're chatting, you're listening to Energy Matters, and we're talking to Sivia Gover today. So talk to us a little bit about what are some ways that we can increase how we can improve our sleep a little bit with some of these techniques that you talk about in your book.
Yeah. So basically start thinking about sleep as part of your day.
Okay.
Paradoxically.
All right.
And approach it as such. So I like to think of backing up in our thinking. So we know sleep and dreams are coming. So how do we prepare for that? So start winding down a little bit earlier in the evening, even if it's just an hour before bedtime, to really start to make that time sacred.
Mm.
Start to really bring your consciousness to it. And maybe start dimming lights. You know, it's a nice time if you enjoy candlelight. It's a nice time to do things by candlelight, or at least turn off overhead lights and start to gradually work your way into the darkness.
Okay.
Meditating. A lot of people meditate in the morning. Mm-hmm. I encourage people to add an evening meditation sometime between dinner time and bedtime.
Okay.
For a couple of reasons. It calms your mind down and starts to relax you towards nighttime. It primes you well for dreaming. But it also, if you incorporate any amount of meditation in your daily life, even if it's 5 minutes a day, I love 12 minutes a day.
That's a good number.
Yeah, I love 12 minutes a day. We could talk about why another time, but it's a great amount. Almost anybody can get that into their day. Because you're practicing being still and quiet and in solitude. And those are the things we need to practice getting comfortable with to have a good night's sleep. Most of us are not comfortable being still and quiet and in solitude. And yet sleep requires it of us. Meditation is a great way to consciously practice being alone with our thoughts and being comfortable with that.
And so if we are able to find a little time of solitude, of being alone with our thoughts, and just being able to, that will increase our overall sleep patterns?
What it will do is it will make us more comfortable being in bed in the dark at night.
Oh.
Which helps us to relax into sleep and dreams.
Because some people are afraid of the dark.
People are, whether it's figuratively or literally, I think most people are afraid of the dark. So just think about what your friends and maybe you do in bed. So a lot of people are watching TV, are on their phones.
Yeah.
I mean, even reading, if it's excessive, although I think some reading before bed can help calm us down and get ready for sleep, but we're distracting ourselves. We're always distracting ourselves from sleep. Or people, a lot of people I know watch TV before bed. Maybe they're not in the bedroom, they're downstairs or they're in another room, but they fall asleep in front of the TV and then in that groggy state, totter off to bed.
Right.
So these
are
all ways.
And that's not the mindfulness moments.
No. That's the opposite. Because all these ways are ways of avoiding that transition. Ideally, you want to be conscious on the pillow, just as you are on the meditation cushion, and watch that transition. Falling asleep shouldn't be something like you fall like with a thud into sleep.
Right.
Better expression would be, you know, entering sleep. You can enter it step by step, and you can watch yourself fall asleep once you become mindfully aware. And that's a beautiful process. And you can go straight into dreams and lucid dreams, which I would love to talk about, too.
Yeah. Well, let's... I do. You kind of left with a little teaser about why the 12-minute meditation is special to you. So let's jump back to that for a moment, because I am curious. What's 12 minutes for you?
I might have oversold that a bit, but a meditation teacher that I studied once said, and I can't remember which one, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Once said that 12 minutes was the minimum, and I love the randomness of it.
It's super random.
Right? It's not 10. It's not 15.
Right.
It's 12.
Yeah.
And I just love the number 12 because, you know, it has so many, you know, I love symbolism, you know, 12 months in a year. And, you know, it's, you know, an even number and all these kinds of things. But really, I like it because it's doable. 20 minutes feels like a stretch for most people.
Yeah.
5 minutes, you don't quite settle in. So I like 12 as your daily minimum.
And 10 minutes, anybody can do 10 minutes, and it's just a little bit more.
Yeah.
like that. I do like that number a lot, too. It works. Cool. All right. So 12 minutes. Try the 12 minutes of meditation, or at least 5, and that's going to help you enter sleep with a little bit of consciousness, which is really the mindfulness is always what we're trying to bring to our day, to our sleep, and it just improves every aspect of our life. of our brain health, sleep, all that good stuff. So let's talk a little bit more about, you mentioned earlier how you are noticing more and more how joy and dreams is also being really paired together. Because I noticed that, you know, mindfulness and sleep is pairing together, and mindfulness and waking is paired together. And this kind of new pattern of joy and dreams is, and joy and wakefulness is really coming out. And that's also the title of your last book, Joy in Every Moment, Mindful Exercises for Waking to the Wonders of Everyday Life. Which, by the way, I got that book for my mom. I think I got both books for my mom because she needs all the mindfulness she could get. I love you, Mom. So, but it's that joy in every moment, that joy and that dreams. Tell us a little bit about what kind of patterns you're noticing within the waking and the sleep state.
Absolutely. So there's so much to say about that, and I actually teach workshops on this joyful dreaming. On the most surface level, it's clear that getting a good night's sleep helps us feel better. And so we're able to be more joyful during the day. Yeah. So on the very most basic level. And then there's the level at which dream work, consciously working on our dreams, helps us work through any impediments we might have to joy. So dreams give us great information about our physical well-being and obstacles there too, as well as emotional, energetic, which I know you're so interested in.
Of course.
Spiritual. So dreams show us both where we're blocked, and they almost always, I like to say always, even though I know one shouldn't, I would say they always give us a healing prescription, you know, healing image or information to help us overcome, transcend, or transform those blocks. Mm. Once we transform those blocks, we can access the joy at our center. But let me just go a teeny bit metaphysical here.
Go for it. That's my domain. I love it. Right? Bring it. Yeah.
So yoga, you know, we practice yoga. I practice yoga. But yoga is much more than the postures. And one of the core teachings of yoga is that we have these five, we're composed of these five subtle bodies, the physical, the energetic, psycho-emotional, and wisdom and intuitive body. And all of those are bodies that we can change, we can affect, we can get, you know, more physically fit, or we can get ill. You know, we can affect those by our behaviors. At the bottom of all of these bodies, at the center of all of them, is the joy body. So with dream work, what we're trying, and that joy body is not affected by anything we do. It is constantly bliss. It is a core of bliss.
Would you say that that joy body is akin to what somebody would call spirit or soul or
something in
true
there?
Purpose or
it's something in there. It's
God
what Jungians
self.
Might call the self with a capital S. It's the fully integrated core of who we are.
Okay.
I like to image it as the sun. Because just like the sun that can be covered with clouds, you know, so a child might think the sun's not there because I can't see it. But it's always there. And the joy body is the same. We cover it over with the clouds of our anxiety, our worries, anything that takes us out of the present moment. But it's always there. And this is something I teach and talk about. And we mentioned how dream work can help get you there. But also, it's not just the yogic tradition. Since it's the time of the Jewish high holidays, you know, we're in between the Jewish New Year and the Day of Repentance or the Day of Atonement.
Absolutely.
It reminds me that in the Jewish tradition, you know, we sing a song also, the song Ashrei, which is a song about joy, the joy that, again, is sort of in our being. It's our spiritual birthright. It's the joy of, you know, being connected to God. And you can interpret God as good or however you want to interpret it. I think we all have a concept of it, even if we don't call it God. It could be, you know, being at one with nature, whatever that concept is for you.
Yeah.
And even, you know, our country, one of our founding principles is the right to pursue happiness.
Of course.
Come on. I mean, so this is something that so many cultures and religions acknowledge, that joy is our purpose and our birthright. So mindfulness, dream work, bring us into the present moment, and that's where we can find that unclouded experience of joy.
That unclouded sunshine.
There you go. I like it.
I like that a lot too. And it's very fitting for that rainy day that we have out there too, to think about, okay, my inner sunshine just has some clouds on it.
Exactly.
Little extra, you know, thoughts or feelings or whatever is just passing over that.
That's exactly right. We could even make it bigger, especially since Florence is on her way to Florence. Maybe. Oh. I hope not. But, you know, Florence, the Hurricane Florence is raging around. And when we think with dream work, I like to go personal and collective. And on the collective level, we're seeing a lot of storms, too. Not just weather storms, but all kinds of storms of hard things going on in the world. So just remember that our collective joy is still always there, too.
Yeah. So that, let's talk a little bit more about your work on a global scale and how dreaming fits into environmental justice for you, as well as sort of this collective dream consciousness. Mm. So you run a I don't always like to buzz market, but I'm gonna, so because it's a Facebook group. So, but it's the 350 Dreamers. Can you tell us a little bit about what that group is all about and how it got started? Just kind of give us a little background about the 350 Dreamers.
Sure. So yeah, 350 Dreamers, one of my many passions is helping people to connect individually and collectively. So, and dreams are so good at both, you know, dreams are part of the collective unconscious, or they bring us to the collective unconscious as well as our personal issues. So 350 Dreamers came about when I heard Bill McKibben, the environmental activist extraordinaire, speaking. And this was back in 2008, I believe, 2008 or 2009. And he invited members of the audience to try to bring awareness to the environmental crisis we're in the midst of, by bringing attention to this idea. His organization is 350.org.
Gotcha.
That if we get beyond 350 particles per whatever, I'm not a scientist, environmentally, in terms of how much carbon's in the atmosphere, we're going to get to a point of no return. Well, unfortunately, we've surpassed that. But he invited us all to be creative and think of a way to draw attention to this issue using literally that number 350.
Oh.
So I was trying to think, well, what could I do? Well, I'm passionate about dreams. Is there any way I can link that in? So I thought, let me try to get 350 people to dream together on the same night for global healing in the face of climate change.
Cool.
At the time, I had myself and my sister who lives in Japan, who agreed to do it.
Nice.
So I thought, okay, now I have an international movement.
Family. You got to start with
right?
family.
Right? Start with the loved ones right nearby or in Japan.
Yeah.
But I thought, now I have an international movement here.
Cool.
So started trying to collect people. I got to 350 people by the deadline that he wanted everybody to do their day of action. We had a night of action where we dreamed together for global healing. And then since then, now we have over 1,000.
Whoa.
And we dream together 4 times a year, usually, for global healing. And that sounds kind of out there, but what we do is pretty simple. We just choose a night. The next one's going to be September 19th.
Okay.
It's coming right around the corner. And anybody can join. You don't even have to be on the Facebook. Just make yourself a note that the night of September 19th, when you go to bed that night, you are going to just set an intention. This is the only thing you have to do. You just set an intention. Tonight, I dedicate my dreams to global healing. And in the morning, write down anything you remember about your dreams, even if it's that you don't remember any dreams. Just write something down, and that's it. You've participated.
So easy.
But a lot of people actually become good at this, and so they really can dream about their intention. And people have very powerful dreams, very specific dreams, beautiful dreams that have to do with healing. They post them on Facebook, on our Facebook page, and we discuss them in the morning. So it's as simple as that. And we've got people around the globe doing this together.
So how does that, it's sort of triggering, it's like my brain is firing with all these kind of cool things that happen. How does that help?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah.
So when I first started this, I thought, well, I don't know if it helps at all. I kind of like to have these beliefs that together our thoughts can have some power in the world of physical things. But, you know, I'm skeptical. I don't know.
Sure.
So
healthy skepticism is an important part of life.
Exactly. So I thought, you know, I was mostly doing it thinking it will give people a feeling of community by setting their intention together, joining together in hope and the idea that we can imagine something better.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, more than that has happened. So a lot of the physical effects on the ground, for example, we had one woman dreaming with us from Paris. And because of the content of her dream, she felt the dream was clearly telling her to get rid of her car. Wow. And to stop spewing emissions into the atmosphere. So she gave up her car. Other people have had images that have helped them heal personally or heal relationships, which I believe it's all connected.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing that is very clear is that it makes us focus on something that's hard to focus on. Just like a nightmare, it's really scary. A lot of people just don't even want to remember it, let alone write it down or talk about it. And climate change is so scary.
It's so big.
It's so big. It's so scary. We feel so powerless. But we don't want to, those of us who want change and want to evolve, we don't want to harden our hearts and close them down and ignore the problem. So this gives us a way to feel like we're in an international community of people thinking and hoping and dreaming literally and figuratively together. Mm. And I do believe it has some effect. I really do.
Yeah.
In my child heart that still wants to believe that there's magic, I really do believe it helps.
Well, you and 1,000 other members of
exactly.
your group.
Exactly. And we got some powerful dreamers in the group. And we've got some people who just play along for the fun of it, and I love all the members.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Energy Matters, and today we're interviewing Sivia Govar, and we're talking about her dream work. She's a certified dream therapist, an author, educator, poet, and we were just talking about her 350 Dreamers dream group. You know, the thing that really was kind of firing off for me is that this thing that I've been kind of thinking about more and more lately is, you know, it's so hard when we're focusing on the problem to get into the vibration of the solution, right? So I like that idea a lot of being solution oriented in our dreams and setting the intention, not on the problem, but how we can dream for what we want. And just allowing whatever messages to come through our subconscious, to come through others' subconscious dreams, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, bingo. I mean, that was really well said, and that's exactly what it's all about. I get really frustrated with the sort of vortex of negativity that we're experiencing right now.
Yeah.
And I am not naive. I read the papers. I listen to the news. I vote. I do the things I can. But focusing on what's wrong, you know, those of us who know about energy know that we're increasing the energy, the negative energy.
Yeah.
And so it's not passivity. It's not surrender in any negative sense to say, I want to look away. I want to spend some time looking away from that and looking to the horizon, looking beyond the horizon, looking to what's possible. I mean, we are literally dreamers.
Yeah.
Everybody dreams. We're programmed for it. There must be a reason. And I believe one of the reasons is survival for the individual and the planet.
I like that.
Yeah.
And Sivia, you have been involved since 2016, or since before then, with the Institute for Dream Studies. Can you tell us a little bit about what is the Institute for Dream Studies, and what are you guys doing over there?
So the Institute for Dream Studies is a school, it's an online school now, to help people get educated in dreams and dream work so that they can become professional dream group leaders or integrate dream work into what they're already doing. So we have coaches who might want to take it so that when their client tells them about a dream, they'll know how to help them figure out the message in it that's going to help them, the healing potential. We have therapists, artists, lawyers, all kinds of people who take the course. It's a year-long online certification course. And we also offer some mini courses and workshops. For example, we have a mini course coming up, a two-session course coming up in September for professionals who want to add a little bit of dream knowledge to their toolkit or to use dreams to advance their professional aspirations.
Very
cool.
So
that's coming up too.
So this is really geared towards professionals who want additional tool sets to support the work and the world around them.
Exactly. And a lot of people take the course simply because they just want to go that deep into dreams, because we study dreams from the scientific, psychological, spiritual, you know, we look at them, it's a very broad foundation and a deep study into dreams.
Cool.
So we usually have at least a few people in every class who are taking it just because they love dreams.
Yeah.
But we gear it towards the idea of becoming a professional dream worker or integrating dreams into your profession.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will say that when I, a lot of times, you know, I'll mention my dreams to somebody and they'll be like, oh, that's nice. But then sometimes I mention my dreams to people and they get just as excited as I do. And I do feel like people are very passionate about dreaming. It seems like it is a niche thing, but people get really into it, whether it's the lucid dreaming where you're awake, you're aware that you're dreaming while you're dreaming, which is very fun. You can just, worlds of adventure unfold upon itself when you're doing lucid dreaming, dream incubation, where it's sort of the 350 dreamers thing where you're dreaming to set an intention or to ask a question. You know, it's a really, really endless world of self-exploration. So it's really, really cool. So you guys are training people at the Institute for Dream Studies. And so this you guys start in December, right? So there's an application.
Yeah. So at instituteforDreamStudies.org, you can learn about the program, and there's an online application. Applications are due by December 1st, and we start our next program in January.
Okay.
And because it's an online program, we have the great ability to have an international student group.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, our current group, we have people from, I think it's 6 different time zones, from Israel to Europe, England, Ireland, and both coasts of the U.S., Canada. It's just amazing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And then when you take classes, online classes, you have international friends. And then when you go travel, you can hang out with them and meet them in person.
It happens. It happens. And it's a lot of fun.
That's really cool. So can you tell us a little bit about like how people benefit, or how you have benefited from, because you were a graduate of this
exactly.
program. You went through this whole program. How did you find... how did it impact you professionally?
Yeah. So it had a huge impact on me. When I started, I took the course in 2009. And at the time, I was one of the people who had no plans for making this into a professional path.
Right.
I just wanted to do it because I love dreams and I wanted to write more about dreams. And I found from taking the course that I love to work with people one-on-one and in groups on their dreams. I didn't think I was going to like that.
Yeah.
But I really found that part of myself, and I found that I was skillful at it.
Mm.
And what I
love... You are very skillful at it.
Oh, thank you.
I have to say.
And what I loved about the training was it did exactly what you just said. It gave me this amazing group of friends and colleagues. We always have guest teachers as well. So all of a sudden, I was rubbing elbows, literally and figuratively, with some of the great dream teachers out there.
Mm.
And it opened up my life in such new and wonderful ways. And it set me on a new career path.
Got to follow your passion.
Yeah.
You never know where it's going to lead.
Exactly.
For me, it was Reiki. For you, it was dreams.
Yeah.
And somehow we met at Clinic Alternative Medicines.
That's exactly right.
You never know.
It's so similar. You know, Reiki and dreams were in the realm of energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we're in the realm of empowerment and health and healing. So.
Yeah. And that deep inner work.
Yeah.
That's really
exactly.
cool. So we just have about a minute left. So tell us a little bit about what's coming up for you. Anything
yeah.
about the mini workshops or anything that you kind of have that's coming up soon for you?
There's a lot coming up both in person and online. I have several Dreaming on the Page, which combines writing and dreams. So for all you writers out there, tapping into the unconscious, whether you remember your dreams or not. And I have several of those coming up with Patchwork Farms. I'll be co-leading with Patricia Lee Lewis at Stump Sprouts coming up the first weekend in December, and some workshops with Straw Dog Writers Guild and Writers in Progress here in Florence. I'll be doing a dream and writing workshop. So I think the easiest thing is to go to TziviaGover.com. If you can spell my name, you can find me, TziviaGover, G-O-V-E-R, www.mindfulnessmedicine.com. And on my events page, I have all this listed with all the links to the signups and everything else.
Awesome. So again, that's siviagover.com. That's TZIVIAGOVER.com. siviagover.com. And you can also check out the Institute for Dream Studies.org and the book, Good Night Sleep. I know that the Mindful Way to a Good Night's Sleep, and that's at lots of local bookstores and all that good stuff. So we are going to close out. Thank you so much for coming. I love chatting with you. And go check out her work, everybody, because she's a very talented woman, and you know, you can explore a whole other world.
Literally, right?
Absolutely. Close your eyes and go adventure. All right. So have a great afternoon, everyone. Take care.